Good afternoon, everyone. This is Janet Foster, and you're listening to The Janet Foster Show, where you get real talk you can act on. It's a great day here in Los Angeles. Hot day again. We're still in a drought, but we're going to keep things going here. One of the things that we're going to talk about today, we're going to talk about the growing popularity of the Green Party. And the reason why we're going to talk about the Green Party is because so many Americans across the country are voicing their dislike and distrust for the current two-party system. And through the research that we've done here at the Janet Foster Show, we have learned a lot of things about the Green Party, and we wanted them here to share some things with you. Before I bring my guest in, I just want to remind you that during today's live broadcast, you can get social with me on Facebook, on the Janet Foster page, and on Twitter and Instagram at Janet D for Deborah Foster. And certainly air your thoughts. And while we're on, and certainly if we have a chance, we'll definitely do some shout outs. Some shout outs for those of you who are sharing. And if you could, with all of your social media, if you could tag it JFO Show, that's J for Janet, FO for Foster, Show, JFO Show. And hashtag that, and we'll definitely get those shout outs. One thing that I want to talk to you about the Green Party, and a lot of feedback that we've gotten from listeners, I want to thank you so much for those of you that participate in some of the surveys that we send out and some of the audience response information that we kind of request about the show, whether it's about my style of hosting. But one thing that's been very consistent with our audience has been that people want more stories about the other side of the elections, not just what we see either on television or what's being produced by the two major parties. But also, people want to know, get a full scope. And like I said before, this show is about real talk that you can act on. So for our listening audience that's interested in other perspectives, and I must say this particular perspective with the Green Party is quite viable. And I know most of us, and I include myself with you as a Gen Xer and millennials that listen to the show, a lot of us really don't know a lot about the Green Party. Some of the cool baby boomers that listen, a lot of you are familiar with the Green Party. But I just want to give you a couple of just updates that I've received and things that we've learned through our research. The first thing is the Green Party is actually listed on at least 20 states here in the United States. And that's significant because as a third party, they have the ability right now in a three-way race. They actually have the ability to garner enough electoral votes to win the presidency. So that's just a thought for a lot of our listeners who are looking at national perspectives. So definitely the Green Party is a party to watch, and I think that they could be a game changer in 2016 just based on the information that we've researched here. Also, with the Green Party, just as of late last week, to the media, press releases went out to the media talking about the Green Party support for basically, you know, having a little bit more diversity and opportunity for in the presidential debates. And right now, the Commission on Presidential Debates, they are looking at debate sites, hosts for the debates, individuals who will actually be moderators. And the Green Party has actually actually voiced its support for Jon Stewart. And for basically our demographic, we know that Jon Stewart is the former host of The Daily Show. And because now he's no longer affiliated with not just the cable network, but he's also someone who has no ties to corporate media. So that's going to be an interesting thing to watch. But my guest today isn't here to talk about some of the latest, some of those things that I've mentioned. My guest today is Remington Alessi, and he's going to be here to kind of just give us, kind of school us a little bit about the Green Party and his experience and a lot of the activity that he is involved with, and also to give us a great introduction to the Green Party. And definitely for those of you who currently list yourselves as independent or decline to state, this may be a conversation that you want to listen to, and we'll have follow-up information afterwards. But right now, my guest, Remington Alessi. Remington, are you there on the line?
Yes, I am.
Oh, excellent. Thank you so much for joining me. I know it's starting to get at the dinner hour there. You're joining us from the Central Time Zone, but we appreciate you speaking with us here in Los Angeles.
Certainly, certainly. Thank you for having me.
Oh, excellent. Well, I talked a little bit about the Green Party, and one of the things that a lot of our listeners have kind of shared is that they want more perspectives on other political options, specifically in terms of party affiliation. And if you can you just tell us a little bit about the Green Party and kind of what it stands for, and just why someone should think about the Green Party?
Absolutely, absolutely. I'd be happy to. First, what's probably most important to bring up about the Green Party is that we operate based on what we call the 10 key values. They're the primary values that we try to operate off of. And those are grassroots democracy, social justice and equal opportunity, ecological wisdom, nonviolence, decentralization, community-based economics and economic justice, feminism and gender equity, respect for diversity, personal and global responsibility, and last, future focus and sustainability. It's rather unfortunate. We oftentimes get boxed into being a special interest party that for whatever reason can be perceived with a limited scope as only supporting things that people traditionally associate with green, such as the environment and weed. But we're very big on intersectionality, and it's a fairly diverse group. But we try to represent as best we can the interests of the left in this country, not merely by paying lip service to it. I know that we have one of our two major parties tends to like to talk about progressive values without actually living up to them. We actually believe in following through with those promises. But unfortunately, we don't often get heard of very much because most media has historically been controlled by moneyed interests, and they essentially act as the gatekeepers, which is why when we've run presidential candidates, they've been specifically barred from participating in presidential debates. Now, we're of the opinion that an open and democratic society would allow for a competition of ideas, and that it's only for the purpose of serving the interests of power that people would be denied access to the ballot or the debates or any of the political process. But overall, we're very big on intersectionality, and we're mostly, I would say, I'm explicitly anti-capitalist. I don't know that every member of the Green Party is, but unfortunately we are, we're still kind of feeling our way through that because capitalism has been so so thoroughly taken as axiomatic and inextricable from our economic system that people oftentimes still struggle with actually forming appropriate critiques to it.
And when you say, I guess when you're talking about anti-capitalistic, support for it, you're talking more about the way American companies or even foreign companies that do business in the U.S., the way they conduct themselves to buy political interests, or is it business in general?
I'd say all of the above.
Okay.
I mean, there's obviously a great deal of critique that has been going on for quite some time of the influence that the disproportionate influence that money has on politics.
Yes.
Now, of course, the primary beneficiaries of that, the Democrat and Republican Party, are of course going to not want to discuss that because that would cut off their money supply.
Right.
So, and that's part of a larger problem, which is to say that our economic system is set up to where no problem gets fixed unless somebody figures out a way to make money off of it.
Correct.
And that makes it so that there's a very limited scope of problems that get fixed, whereas problems that people can make money off of tend to get ignored. Probably the most glaringly obvious example of that would be the private prison industry.
Yes. I think a lot that's receiving a lot of discussion these days, even here with this show being a LA-based show. Hollywood is actually taking that on in productions. There definitely has been discussions, formal discussions, as well as basically art imitating that. For sure, with the prison industrial complex, that's for sure. And I also assume too that also kind of the capitalist attitude also falls into the best way I can describe it is the military industrial complex as it relates to wars.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And one of the neat things about these critiques is basically that the voices of people who ordinarily would be ignored in their critiques of the oppressive nature of our current society ordinarily really would probably be ignored if it weren't for the rise of the internet in the last couple of decades. Because what's essentially occurring is that where 20 or 30 years ago a few major corporations controlled the majority of what information we were exposed to, and this is still the case. Currently, there's a lot more access to citizen-based journalism, and people are able to broadcast their voices in a much more meaningful way. So I don't think the criticisms of our oppressive society are particularly new. I just think that that we've got a unique infrastructure that is now enabling people to elevate those critiques. And I might add, this may be I believe that this is a driving force behind the federal government's repeated attempts at regulating and otherwise constraining the internet.
Oh yes, the latest. Technically, they are in the sense that we have one of the slowest. I think we pay to have slow service here in the U.S. Regardless to who your provider is, compared to Europe, even compared to South Korea, in terms of speed, and definitely, I think the point that you made about controlling the internet is one area that's going to be a focus, and that's something that you bring up a great segue into something that I want to talk to you about is your voter outreach, because the web is so accessible, and I know that. For me as a freelance journalist, I've gotten a lot of great responses from you and from the Green Party. And actually, I've gotten them much more rapid than I have from the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, specifically. And your information is much more open versus me getting information in a dump from a controlled source from the other two areas. And I just, thinking about, you know, my interactions with just as doing my job as a journalist with the Green Party, what kind of voter outreach activity is the Green Party working on? Because, you know, what I talked about at the top of the show was that you guys are listed on ballots in different states, and some of them are states that I wouldn't have thought that you would have existed in, like a Mississippi or an Arkansas, but you are on the ballot, which and it puts you, the number of states, it puts you in play. So, you know, what kinds of grassroots organizing are you doing to coalesce? Because you guys are really doing something great.
Oh, well, thank you. There's, it tends to vary based on the area, because ballot access is very much an uphill battle. But one of the unique obstacles that we're facing is something that I'd rather hope that maybe some of the listeners might be interested in helping us with, is that we essentially live in a society where money dictates access to pretty much everything, including the political process. And that's pretty much, I think, a fairly uncontroversial concept. But because we're volunteer-based and we don't have and we believe in decentralization and grassroots democracy, we aren't paying staff, and it's part of our charter. We don't accept corporate donations at all.
Wow.
We oppose Citizens United, for example. Mm-hmm. The ruling that corporations have the rights of people in free speech. And part of that makes it so that we rely exclusively on volunteers. We can't hire a massive staff to AstroTurf a campaign. Mm-hmm. And that's partly by design. The thing is, instead of limiting people's access and limiting people's ability to participate, we actually invite people to join in the process. While going to a Democratic or Republican Party group might not be terribly inclusive. They might just want you to show up and donate some money and clap a little bit and then go home, because they're a very top-down organization. Mm-hmm. We actually prefer for people to get involved and very much welcome people. I can't speak on behalf of the local chapters to the Los Angeles area. I know that here in Houston, Texas, we're very dedicated to being a bottom-up rather than top-down organization. And it's part of that dedication to grassroots democracy again.
Well, if I'm hearing you, because you guys are you're very grassroots in each of the states that you're present in. Can you walk us through with maybe in Texas how you're doing voter outreach? Because it seems like everybody's doing outreach, and you're doing it locally, and it feeds up, as what you describe, bottom up.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to begin, we're kind of facing a unique problem right now, and one of it, and that problem is, in some ways not new at all, but it's very much unique, and it's that our party, while trying to appropriately represent the left, is primarily made up of white male cisgender folks who, if we assume the best intentions, still are not terribly inclusive or representative of the oppressed folks that we wish that we could represent the interests of. And you know, I'm certain that there are probably some very pointed and accurate critiques of paternalistic behavior on our part for doing so.
Uh-huh.
But I do think that many of us want to be part of the solution. Now, grappling with that is a constant struggle. And for that reason, What we've been trying to do is invite invite more diverse folks to participate. In fact, I actually should have said in advance. I actually feel as though, you know, as a white male guy, as a white dude, I feel like my voice is actually overrepresented, and I'm not entirely comfortable speaking on behalf of the entire party for that reason.
Sure, but. And I just have to tell you though, your voice is valid. One of the things that I know as a veteran journalist researching diversity issues, I think you're right on time and you're perfect, because when a white straight dude gets it and talks about diversity, diversity happens. So you are a part of the solution and you're bringing the solution. But I do understand where you're coming from, but you are qualified to talk about where things need to go for sure. And that's what you're sharing with us. And I appreciate you being that candid and sharing your candor.
An unfortunate consequence of a white supremacist society that my voice might be relevant in that topic even. But actually, going back to the core issue though, of doing voter outreach, what we're trying to do is we're constantly trying to do better with mm-hmm. very little. And one of the things that we discovered was actually during the national meeting, we meet up every year for a large convention. We had ours in St. Louis, actually walking distance from where Michael Brown was murdered last year.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that we've long taken pride in the fact that we have tried to be a vanguard with regard to political positions. You know, for example, we championed marriage equality decades before the Democrats stopped actively condemning it, among right. a whole bunch of issues. But unfortunately, what we're finding is that simply soapboxing about the issues is not enough, and that, for instance, going to St. Louis and talking economic policy to the folks in Ferguson is just not enough. And what we're finding is that for us to amply be involved in the community, we actually have to support the community.
Got it.
So mm-hmm. what we've been doing is actually looking at ways to support local movements. And this basically has to do with the fact that, you know, we can white-splain some economic policy all day long, but that's really not getting anybody anywhere.
Right.
And what matters is what we're concretely doing as a group. And so this goes hand-in-hand with what I understand to be of critiques of white allyship as far as being supportive rather than simply taking the microphone.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, and, you know, that's a great point. And what I find refreshing from a journalist's perspective is the fact that you're very candid about that. Whereas if I were to point that question, the same question, out to the duopoly that exists, I would get completely different answers. And I would never get the onus of either side talking so candid about, I definitely would not get a straight white male telling me that they aren't comfortable talking about that. Whereas generally on both sides of the party, they will tell you what they want you to hear. And it's it's usually a pat speaking point. So. And again, I guess that goes to your grassroots movement. And then what's very interesting, and I think our audience, and actually I just got a tweet from Fat Cat and gave you the thumbs up, about explaining about Ferguson, the thoughts about Ferguson. So Fat Cat on Twitter, thanks and shout out for listening and responding. In addition to voter outreach, you mentioned that you had a kind of a meeting, a convention meeting. Do you, because most of my listeners are interested in kind of the process that the Green Party takes to select kind of nominees, because we've become so culturized by what we're given in corporate media about how basically, you know, the coverage of both the Republican and Democratic conventions that, you know, I think by chance, if people are watching C-SPAN, they may see things about the Green Party. What I want to know is that does the Green Party actually have a system or a process where people can go to a national convention and participate voting? Just how does that work in the Green Party?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. Unlike the Republican and Democratic Party, because we don't necessarily have full ballot access in all states, we currently nominate by convention. And what that entails is we have delegates, much like in days of old, who are democratically selected. Like, for example, in 2012, I had to be nominated and approved at the precinct level, and then on the county level, and then on the state level before I was allowed to go to, then it was Baltimore in 2012 for the presidential nominating convention. However, for local races, it's done, for local races, people can get involved at pretty much any level. If a person were to want to run for a city council position like Kashama Sawant, I would expect that, at least in Houston, anyone who wanted to do that would be welcomed with open arms and widely supported. And that wouldn't necessarily require a lengthier process. But with the presidential nomination, what we then do is at a national convention, the elected delegates choose. They, of course, have been exposed for quite some time to the campaigning that goes on as the candidates have campaigned in search of the party nomination, mm-hmm. and then we vote. We, of course, you know, some of us, myself included, make up our minds in advance. Like, for example, in 2012, it was between Dr. Jill Stein and Roseanne Barr. I am rather thankful that we nominated Jill Stein, because it later on came out that Roseanne Barr had a very had a position that I strongly oppose regarding supporting the IDF, mm-hmm. and has been very dismissive of the genocide that's been waged against the Palestinian people. Mm-hmm. Now, currently, we've got a whole bunch of candidates in the running, several who haven't announced their candidacy.
Just for a second, I want to catch you there for a second. I do know that there's more than 40 that have filed paperwork with the Federal Elections Committee, but you just said that there are more to come?
Yes, I have no doubt. There are some folks who are basically doing exploratory campaigns, which is something that, due to the complexities of campaign finance law, you basically can go check out whether or not you'd have feasible support before you actually start running.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there are a lot of people who are running for president. I'm really rather curious about the phenomenon that seems to be occurring. I think I can infer a bunch about the clown car full of Republicans who are running. However, we've got several people running for the Green Party nomination, five of whom came to the national meeting, okay. and have already been actively running. In fact, there's one person who I find particularly intriguing and thus far have taken quite a shine to, and I believe she's actually from around the Los Angeles area. It's a lady named Setinam Kinamo Christiane Moyowasipsa Curry.
Okay.
And I assure you, she has a mouthful of a name. However, it's one of the things that she actually stressed at the convention, that it's important to remember people's names, precisely because basically the regard with which we give the pronunciation of a person's name can very quickly be used to dehumanize them.
Absolutely.
And I think she's kind of brought this up with regard to the manner in which white America has been very dismissive of more diverse names.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that you have a candidate here in the LA area. Now, when you talk about your convention, I'll get a little bit back to that a little bit.
Sure.
The exploratory campaign that you brought up about, there are some people that right now they're testing the waters. Again, for our audience, we're so culturized to how the duopoly handles that. Is that with the Green Party, with the example you just gave of the kind of the national meeting, and you said five people showed up, for folks who may be running but they haven't declared yet, is there some kind of process that they do with that? Do they travel to local areas, since you are a bottom up kind of party?
Well, yeah, it starts by getting support from your local chapter, but
okay.
I would actually recommend, I don't know if there, again, I'm not entirely sure about the enthusiasm to run for president, but I feel it's probably necessary to mention that there are many, many, many other elected offices that can be run, that need people's attention.
Sure.
And in fact, one of the things that's been discussed at least on the local level in my chapter for the last couple of years is the fact that local posts can actually be quite important. In fact, mm-hmm. a big battle that Texas has been fighting is this battle over textbooks. We've got incredibly reactionary ideology and revisionist history being put into textbooks because, starting about 40 years ago, one party that's particularly conservative started taking over local races. Mm-hmm. And so they exercise a lot of control over things that we don't normally think about, but in the case of textbooks, can have an incredible influence on society for in the long run.
Definitely. I have done some research and actually have done some reporting on how basically American history will be reinterpreted in Texas, which could be different from everywhere else in the United States. Definitely.
Well, it's not just in Texas, though. In mm-hmm. Texas is in a particularly powerful position to influence not just Texas but other states, because the amount of textbooks that Texas orders mm-hmm. makes it so that manufacturers tend to create textbooks based on what Texas's legal requirements are,
mm-hmm.
and they cater to the to specifically Texas. And a lot of other states purchase those textbooks without really having a say in it, but since Texas is a particularly large consumer of textbooks, they've actually got a disproportionate influence in the market for what goes into the textbooks.
And it's easy, and what I'm hearing you say is that more than likely, from the manufacturer standpoint, it's easy for them to tout the state of Texas as a customer and maybe peddle those books elsewhere.
Yeah, and it's similar to how, as I understand it, California emission standards mm-hmm. tend to set the bar for the rest of the country.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing seems to be happening on only a slightly smaller scale with regards to textbooks in Texas.
Got it. Thank you for sharing that with our audience. And I got another text. People are really loving you. I've got something here from
you,
Lolo. Lolo just said, I love this guy.
Well, thank you, Lolo. I appreciate that.
Definitely, definitely. I want to go back, circle back to the convention. You described for us kind of the road and how a person can become a delegate to the Green Party's convention. And I want to talk to you about maybe people who are at home, since we've got voters who are independent, which means they're just open. I want to talk to you about how maybe how accessible your convention is for maybe someone who they're not declaring as a Green, but they want to hear what's happening and they want to see your candidates and things like that. And I know with the with easy access to the web, whether it's by phone or other mobile devices, is your convention something that can be accessed by web, or even if people just happen to be in the same location where you are and they just want to roll through and come through and just see what's going on, is it open, kind of a drop-in, kind of open for registered voter?
Absolutely. I mean, look, that's the thing. We're not the Republicans and we're not the Democrats. They're the ones who call massive SWAT teams in order to keep out people that they don't want. We actually take this whole democracy thing quite seriously, and that's why, of course, it's an open forum. If it weren't an open forum, it wouldn't be democracy.
Right.
There are of course some barriers to participate. I mean, we try to host everything that we can in accessible buildings. However, it's not always easy to travel because, of course, our national convention is held in one place.
Right.
In fact, it's Houston that was recently voted to be the location of our presidential nominating convention next August.
Okay.
So. I don't know. I know that it's not always easy to travel across the country to participate in the democratic process, but that doesn't necessarily limit a person. Because again, in thinking about the bottom-up method in which this operates,
mm-hmm.
There's plenty to be done at the local level, and frankly, the local level is very much our roots, that from which the rest of the party gets its nourishment. For example, I've pulled up on the web. It appears that the Green Party of L.A. County meets, but I don't see a whole lot of recent updates on their website.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone who may not be able to travel might be able to offer skills to do web design, it's entirely possible they may want or need that.
Oh, okay. Okay, so it's and not only to get to the convention, but again, with the bottom-up kind of concept, people could just basically randomly contact their local chapter if they're in a state that provides that. And for our listeners, we'll actually list.
Or if someone wants to start a local chapter where there isn't one, the whole point is to influence participation, and that's part of the point. We spend so much focus. I think it's just because our society is so deeply authoritarian that we tend to just think by default along these lines,
mm-hmm.
this idea of everything being top down.
Mm-hmm.
We really do wish to literally and figuratively turn that model on its head, in the sense that we welcome involvement, and in addition to welcoming that involvement, there are ways that people can get involved that they ordinarily would not be able to. I mean, this is very much a people-driven movement.
Oh, you know, that's fabulous. Because based on, you know, there are still 31 more states that people can actually start chapters in. And, you know, and this is kind of going back to your work in Texas, because the Green Party is on the ballot in Texas. And you talked a little bit about local elections and the importance of local elections in your strategy. There in Texas, are you seeing more greens coming up in some of the local elections, whether it's in your chapter or other parts of Texas?
Actually, of all the places, we've recently had made some tremendous progress in a place called Laredo.
I'm familiar with Laredo.
Well, for those who aren't, it's along the Rio Grande on the Texas-Mexico border.
Uh-huh.
One of the problems is that there's higher than average for the U.S. corruption in a lot of these towns that are owned by cartels, and mm-hmm. In the Rio Grande Valley, there's been a lot of consistent outcry for people wishing to have someone who's not part of the political establishment and, as a consequence, corrupt as hell, mm-hmm. involved. So we had somebody win a city council seat in Laredo, if memory serves me, although don't quote me.
You're getting some traction in Laredo, Texas.
Yes.
And pardon me for my reaction, but of all the when you said of all the places, you know, I was really thinking, okay, it's going to be maybe north, like the Dallas-Fort Worth area or something like that. And when you said Laredo, that kind of like took me way over. Like, wow. And that's kind of... That's impressive.
For as much as this country seems to be assumed to be very homogenous, there's actually a pretty strong radical bent in Texas, and it has to do with the fact that, you know, yeah, there's obviously a dominant culture that pretty much bulldozes the views of anybody else, mm-hmm. but there's actually quite a healthy, growing radical movement in many parts of Texas. We've been seeing growth in participation, new chapters trying to start up, and our biggest obstacle has actually just been being there to support people with the time to help them set it up and walk them through. So, I mean, we need help.
I
doubt that Texas is particularly unique because a lot of people, I think for a very long time, this isn't even particularly new, have wanted a party that actually does try to represent the interests of people rather than a small ruling class of corporations and billionaires.
Got it. That sounds great. And it definitely, again, what you're talking about, your volunteers, you're just more, the more foot soldiers that you have, the more that you can do. So,
well, it's not a factor of foot soldiers. I mean, in our non-hierarchical system, the idea is that everybody is a leader.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, this is not something where the two parties that control this country mm-hmm. may be looking for people who are going to be robotically and without question following the orders that come down from the leadership. Mm-hmm. We don't believe in that. Like, when we say grassroots democracy and decentralization, mm-hmm. we mean that. The whole purpose is to empower people to act in a way that represents themselves and their interests. So it really does require you to kind of turn the hierarchical thinking on its head in that regard.
Okay. And I was sort of thinking, too, about kind of our younger voters, our millennials, the younger millennials, those that are still in college, those between 18 and 22, particularly the 18-year-olds, they're voting for the first time. And what I'm seeing with in trends, a lot of them are declaring independent in large amounts. And a lot of them are echoing their distrust of kind of corporate interest and corporate controlled politics. And actually we got one question that came in by someone who was 21 that just says they've never worked on a campaign, and they just wanted to ask about advice if they were getting to the Green, contacting the Green Party, maybe their local, What's the best advice for them since they don't know? It's sort of that, I don't know what I can offer, but I'm interested and I want to be on board.
That is fantastic. That is a fantastic question that I think a lot of people have. One of the biggest obstacles that I think we have collectively is that we oftentimes don't realize our own power.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'd like to apologize in advance for language that may borderline on ableist.
That's
but,
okay.
part of the whole process of this is asking that question and then listening to the response and finding out. Now, but to do so on a local level and to do so in person, not merely asking it on Yahoo Answers or something like that.
Right.
If I were to guess, that question is usually answered by joining some sort of a group that's out to help people. Now, it can be the Green Party or any other group, but I guarantee you, any grassroots group, if it is legitimately grassroots, will want your help, and I assure you they will have plenty that they can offer you to do.
Okay.
That's usually how you can tell if
okay.
a group is grassroots. When they want and need your help and are happy to see you, then that's usually how you can tell. It's the ones that are beholden to corporate interests that typically have more than enough money to go around and don't want you to do anything other than give them a fat check. But
got it.
So I hope that serves to answer the question. I would recommend, you know, of course, trying to get in touch with the L.A. County Green Party or any of the movements that are going on there. I'm operating off of the assumption that L.A. has traditionally been a hotbed of political activity and probably has far more going on than the oil and gas holes capital of the nation in Houston.
Well, we're number two. We're, you know, what's interesting is we drill for oil here in California. And especially here in Southern California, between Beverly Hills, there oil's being pumped out. You've got those mansions in Beverly Hills, but there are definitely oil is being drilled throughout this state for sure. So definitely, if you're here in LA, grab contact the local Green chapter here, and certainly for listeners elsewhere, grab your local chapter and. For those of you who are listening that are in the Houston area, jump on Houston. It sounds like Houston's on the ball, definitely. And so give me a shout out to listeners. Give me a shout out and let me know how you're listening and what your thoughts are. Remington, we've got just a few minutes left. What's a kind of a parting message that you can share with our audience about, giving the Green Party a chance?
For more diverse individuals who may have encountered the Green Party as being dominated by old white guys, there's actually some good news. As a result of the last 15 years of trying to basically recruit angry Democrats, we've basically got a bunch of folks who are actually more loyal to the Democratic Party than the Green Party, which might seem like a bad thing. But it turns out that all of these folks are very quick to join Bernie Sanders' campaign in order, and while they go around white-splaining their economic policy to oppressed people and not letting them on the microphone, which basically means that parts of the Green Party have basically just been abandoned with the keys in the ignition, with ballot access.
Mm-hmm.
So. And that, combined with the fact that we're a volunteer organization, makes it so that there's a huge vacuum for people to get involved and to really assert themselves. So while it might at times be difficult to imagine at the age of 21 or what have you getting involved, that's totally possible. And the majority of it is just believing that it is and getting there.
Okay, great. Thank you for that. And again, Remington, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, definitely. And we'll have to bring you back. Our time is up for today, but we appreciate you joining us and sharing. And definitely to listeners, shout out for giving us some feedback while we're on the air. Also to the listeners, continue to give us feedback on today's episode. And for those of you who are listening, if you want to reach out to the Green Party, their website is www.gp.org. On Twitter, you can catch them at Green Party US. And on Facebook, you can get them at Green Party, and it's a political party page. So once again, thank you to our guest, and thank you everyone for listening. And we'll be back this time, same time, next week, and just have a wonderful week. Thank you.